Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, three different aspects of and approaches to dealing with the COVID-19 crisis from three different perspectives. That of a major regional museum director, the general director of a regional opera company, and a local artist who has organized a unique way for artists to display their work in these days of gallery closures. Sebastian Bach's music is featured today as recorded here in our KPBX studios by Julia Gorenman and Melody Puller. This is Northwest Arts Review. Wes Jessup is executive director of the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture in Spokane's Brown's Addition, an institution heavily affected by current COVID-19 restrictions. I talked with him about these and what he and his staff are doing to keep the museum and its work in the public's consciousness. What are the things that are giving you the greatest headache, sending you for the most aspirin these days?
I think the hardest thing for us right now is that not being able to have the public in on our campus makes it a challenge for us to operate in terms of the revenue that we generate.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to be closed, and we have this amazing exhibition, Pompeii, Immortal City, that's been up since February. We were only able to open that for 6 weeks before we had to close because of the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
We have a staff that includes full-time salary employees and then part-time employees, most of whom work with the public everywhere from education and the admissions desk through other functions at the museum. It could be the cafe or the bookstore.
In terms of your typical operations, is this a time that is typically quite busy, or do you find that it's pretty even all year around?
A lot of our business model leans on the main exhibition that we have in our large gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So by having a large exhibition like Pompeii, it would be considered a very busy time of year.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So like the first 6 weeks of that show, we had around 12 or 13,000 visitors to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Without those visitors, we've really had to make adjustments, not only in staffing, but just kind of the whole operation.
Well, right. To leave the doldrums here, have you been able to turn any of this situation around in terms of making parts of the current exhibit, the Pompeii exhibit, accessible to people?
Yeah, in fact, we've had a lot of programs that we've been able to video, and we've also done some video tours of the galleries. We've videoed the lecture series that we have. We've been able to share that, so that's been really wonderful. And we've also instituted some other programs that are available only on video.
Mm-hmm.
So things like Storybook Hour for children. That's been a really great program that's getting a lot of traction. All of these, by the way, are on the museum's website and social media.
None of us have any real sense in terms of when we might be able to open up our lives and for you to, again, open the galleries. But are there currently contingency plans in place so that when the okay is given, you'll be ready to implement what you can in terms of accessibility?
Yes. In fact, the staff has drawn up a reopening plan that guarantees 100% social distancing, no-touch visits, meaning that the doors and the payment methods can be all done online.
Mm-hmm.
So that somebody could visit or a family could visit the museum as soon as we're given the green light, and they could come and experience the exhibition and not have to come in contact with other visitors.
Mm-hmm. This has been something that I think caught everybody off guard, and it's teaching us various kinds of lessons. As someone who works in a very important endeavor in our lives, the bringing of things of artistic worth and beauty before the eyes of all of us, and realizing that this all takes money to do. Are there any lessons that you are gleaning from this experience? Because they have, after all, told us that this could be a recurring event.
Right. I mean, I think it's been a big wake-up call for the whole museum and art industry. And we have to kind of reconsider and think about how we do business going forward. Like you mentioned, I think it might look different after all is said and done. And I think that's part of the reason we're focusing a lot of staff resources right now on being prepared for the moment when we can reopen and making sure that our visitors feel safe and secure coming in and making sure that they can have a great experience at the museum and still maintain the kind of safety standards that are required.
In terms of what other museums may be doing, do you know if there's a real movement afoot to thoroughly document this very significant time in our history that could ultimately be something that is an exhibition from which we learn important lessons?
Right, and it's pretty interesting because we also, another exhibition we have up right now is a 40th anniversary of Mount St. Helens eruption, which was another disaster on a massive scale. And our hope is that the things that we do now will help future museum curators and directors tell the story of the coronavirus in 40 years. It's been interesting having the lens of Mount St. Helens to look through and think about what could they have done differently 40 years ago to make this an easier story to tell. So it's a really interesting connection between these massive, kind of unpredictable events that impact our society and history. And how do you document that? There's so many different ways you can go about it. So our history curator is focusing on finding objects and finding oral histories and stories that will enable future museum staffers to be able to tell this story.
Wes Jessup, thank you so much for being with us on Northwest Arts Review. And remind us of the website of the MAC and, the sorts of things that we can see once we get there.
Right. So the website is northwestmuseum.org. And on the front page, there's a link to the online offerings, which include a tour of the Campbell House. There's a tour of the exhibition of Pompeii. There's some other collection stories that are online from our permanent collection. There's Storybook Hour. And one of the highlights is a lecture series we were having with the American Institute of Archaeology. And we are able to broadcast those and also record them so people can watch them later. And these are some of the top experts in the field of archaeology as it relates to Pompeii. And these are lectures that have had 300 to 400 people logging on to watch the last two. And so we're really happy that there's still ways to reach out to people and connect and, you know, give them the kind of experience that we would hope can educate them and enlighten them and be an interesting, exciting kind of way to experience a museum while they can't actually come to the campus.
Wes, again, thanks so much for your time and best of health to you and all of your colleagues and family, and hope for a brighter future.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Wes Jessup, Executive Director of the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture. Their website is northwestmuseum.org. Performing arts organizations have a unique set of challenges these days, as we learn now from Inland Northwest Opera's General and Artistic Director, Dawn Volsky. I've got the great pleasure of talking today with Dawn Volsky, who is the General and Artistic Director of Inland Northwest Opera. So greetings, Dawn. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for this opportunity.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We'll start with the tough stuff. So what is it that Inland Northwest Opera is having to endure that wasn't there a couple of months ago?
That's a great question. You know, we came into this in a slightly different position than some other arts organizations throughout the country, in that our season typically runs from April this year until September or October. And we do some other smaller events in what we call the off season, but we're a little bit more of an extended summer kind of festival in some ways. And so we weren't burdened with a huge hit. We weren't in the middle of a show. You know, I have friends all throughout the country who were on stage for final dress rehearsals and then had their shows canceled. The companies had to shut down right in the middle of a run. So
well, that hurts.
I consider ourselves, it really hurts, and it puts a completely different burden on a company because at that point you have all of your expenses, really. I mean, you owe your artists something for all that time they put in, and mm-hmm. yet you've completely lost your revenue stream. And so I feel just unbelievably fortunate that INO was not in that position. Okay. But we did have some events that were scheduled for April, May, and June that we did have to shift. So most importantly, we had our educational outreach program. That main role was to get into the schools and bring children's opera to these elementary kids all throughout Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. And obviously that was no longer an option. Mm-hmm. And we had another premier event this year, which was going to be an incredible luncheon / performance and interview. We had an incredible Polynesian tenor who was an NFL football player who was coming in to sing all the great tenor arias and then also talk about his career moving from NFL to opera. And so both of those things, we are really hopeful that we can shift them into the fall. But at this point, you know, it's hard to make those assertions. That kind of gives you the burden and the hope. It's interesting that you use the word burden because I, as part of a musician couple here in Spokane with my husband as concertmaster of the symphony, I feel a huge responsibility to this region musically. Mm-hmm. We always have, and we're raising our child here, and we're committed to being part of this community for a very, very long time. And so the burden that I feel moving forward is not really just about what we can do. It's not really about whether we're able to hold a show or not. I mean, those are the logistics and those are the mechanics, mm-hmm. but I'm really a lot more concerned about the comfort level and the climate of both my patrons and the artists. That's the burden that I feel. And I have the misfortune in some ways of being one step removed from personally knowing the choir director who held that choir rehearsal in Skagit, where he was 100% within the mandates and the rights at the time. I mean, he held a choir rehearsal and thought at the time that it would be okay. And he ended up having almost his entire choir contract this virus because, as we've learned now, when you speak forcefully or you sing, you carry it a little bit further. And so he didn't have all the information at the time and made the best decision that he could. And now he has this sort of burden to live with of what happened with that choir. And so we're looking moving forward at just making sure that anything we choose to do, we have considered every possibility for protecting our patrons and mm-hmm. for protecting our artists. That's my biggest burden, I think, is feeling personally responsible for the health and safety of everyone who comes together under the INO umbrella.
Are your artists primarily from the region?
In terms of actual numbers, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Most of our artists, you know, our orchestra, our chorus, some of the lead roles and many of the secondary roles are regional. So the Inland Northwest region, but also kind of Seattle, Portland, maybe down to Boise or Salt Lake. And then the majority of our principal artists come actually internationally at this point. So our next up performance is scheduled to be Don Pasquale in July. And two of those artists come from Switzerland, actually. They're, you know, they've got some ties here.
Yeah.
So I would say the majority of our artists, yes, come from the region, but the principal artists are mostly from New York or other, you know, national or international homes.
What is Inland Northwest Opera doing to keep the home fires burning, so to speak?
That's a great question. Well, I'd like to say we're kind of still in the R&D phase. Because it's still a little too soon to be definitive mm-hmm. about the season we already had planned. And yet, I sort of have this, I guess, gift, I think, for an artist. It's always fun to be more creative. My primary season that was already planned, and a few things have had to shift. But then I have seasons B and C that I have to consider. If we're not able to do one, how else can we still bring some joy to our community and joy to our patrons, especially right now when we're all itching to be entertained and have something a little bit different? So we are not able to make definitive decisions right at this minute because there's still so much that's unknown, but I'm talking with people actually all over the country about some different options. And so, you know, locally, we're looking at shifting venues, for example, from a previous venue that might have been very, very difficult to get any kind of physical distancing to one that would be outdoors that would allow both our patrons and our artists to be completely in compliance with what is considered safe distancing. And that actually provides a really interesting and fun challenge from an artistic perspective. How can we make one of our operas really interesting and still relevant and yet not have our artists be in any danger in being close to each other? And how can we do that? And so I can't tell you exactly what we're considering right now, but it's very comical and very interesting, and it involves some additional characters that weren't in the original operas that helped people distance from each other. So we're trying to be as creative as we can to make that happen. And then we're also, of course, looking at these virtual options and how do you think outside the box? Where can we still provide this art, whether it's some type of Zoom happy hour in a couch concert or interactive operas where you call in from your phone and it's like something no one's ever seen before. I've kind of put out a call for ideas to every single one of my artists that I was looking to employ this season. And I think that's important. I'd like to at least mention that we, you know, artists are at the heart of what we do. And so if any of our artists are unable to perform with us this season, I'm trying really hard to see if I can find alternate opportunities for them to still reach our patrons and still get some income from our company if their primary event with us has been canceled. So we're doing a couple of things. For one, we are paying our artists even if we have to shift an event. So we just had our outreach opera had to be completely shifted. And when it shifts, you know, your artists are not available for the next period. And we went ahead and paid them anyway, a large portion of their fee, because we felt that they really set aside that time for us. And that was critical. And then we're also looking for other virtual opportunities to feature them, even if it's just, you know, a little clip here or there. So exploring all options and trying to bring out the creative juices in anyone and everyone who's been connected with our company to say, how else can we keep bringing that entertainment and joy and sometimes the challenge of thinking about a situation a little differently? How can we keep that alive? So it's been a challenge, and it's kind of been a fun one, I think, at that, too.
Dawn, thank you for being with us today. I think you gave us a real insight into what you are trying to do in a period of great difficulty for all arts organizations, of thinking very positively about the future and really trying to put things in place so that when the doors finally do open, you'll be ready for it.
We are trying. You know, the idea is you have to just be very flexible and ready for anything, and understanding what your mission is. At the end of the day, you know, we are here for the people in the Inland Northwest. I mean, as much as I'd love to be there for people in person, and opera is really exceptional in person, that is the best way to hear it, but we are trying to just meet people where they are as best as we can. So hopefully we'll have some more information for you in a few weeks about what that might look like and what people can hope for going forward with INO.
All right, very good. Dawn Volsky, General and Artistic Director of Inland Northwest Opera. We do indeed look forward to more news from the company and for some great things coming up, perhaps even this summer. We can hope.
Yes, we can hope.
Inland Northwest Opera's website is inlandnwopera.com. I'm Jim Tevenin, and this is Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, now available as a podcast at spokanepublicradio.org. artist Denny Carmen, a frequent visitor to Northwest Arts Review, is above all an advocate for local art and the artists who produce it. Here is his creative way of keeping art in the public eye.
Yeah, well, the original idea was suggested to me a while back here. I don't know if you remember that or not. They were having people put teddy bears and stuff in their windows for kids to see as they walked around with this epidemic going on, mm-hmm. or a pandemic. And I thought about, when I heard that, I thought about putting art in windows. So I put a post out asking an artist to put art up into the windows for people to see during the shutdown if they're driving by. Well, after that, my good friend Alice Harmon, an amazing artist, she sent me a message because she knows if somebody tells me something, I'm going to go for it. And she sent me a message, said, hey, what would you think about for artists put art in their front yards? And then people can drive by, check out the artists and their artwork without getting out of the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as she told me that, and then my mind started working, and I jumped on and put the word out, and it's just taken off like crazy. I'm very excited about it.
First of all, tell us the outlines of the event, when it's going to take place, and maybe some of the locations, at least in terms of how far and wide there'll be art on display.
The event will happen this coming Saturday, the 2nd. All the artists will be displaying their work in their front yard, and this is all over our community. And then members of our community will go on to the Facebook page, get a online map of all the locations, and then they can get out for the day, drive by the artists' homes, look at the art, wave at the artists, give them their support without having to have, you know, face-to-face contact.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens, like I say, this Saturday the 2nd from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. I have artists, Coeur d'Alene, Cheney, up north, the Valley, all over our area, and I've even had, believe it or not, artists that are friends contact me from New Mexico, Oklahoma, different states like that, saying they want to do it in their area. I'm hoping that happens at the same time.
Yeah, that's really outstanding. And
yeah,
as you said, there will be a map that will be posted on the Facebook page of...
This page on Facebook is called Art on the Go Art Show. That's Art on the Go Art Show. And that's an event page. The map will be on there. I was hoping today, but my good friend Morgan Walters, she designed the poster for the event, and she's doing the map, and she's doing an amazing job.
Mm-hmm.
But she won't be able to get it up until Friday morning before the event because we still have artists coming in.
Right, sure.
And she's wanted to make sure that the map is complete. And it's going to look cool. She's doing an amazing job.
Good, good. At this point,
yeah.
How many artists are going to be showing their work?
Right now, I have 47.
Wow.
Signed up. I didn't expect this many. I mean, I thought, you just never know what this art community is. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing community. But I have 47 signed up, and the word's out there, and I have a feeling that there's going to be quite a few more before the end of the week.
Sure. Do you know anything about the range of the art that's going to be on display? I mean, will there be sculpture as well as painting as well as photography? Or do you have a sense of that?
You know, at first I thought it would just be paintings to be seen, but I've been contacted by artists that do sculptures, that do jewelry, that do a little bit of everything, and they asked me if they could, you know, display that. And I told them I would love for them to... Whatever they make, display it. Just make sure that it's displayed to where people are not going to be getting out of their cars and walking around the yard looking at jewelry and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure that people can just pull up, look at what they have, you know, give them that support. But I did ask them, too, if they could do it, these artists, to make out a sign with their contact information or their websites or whatever they have. That way, when somebody drives through and if they're interested, I can contact them about their pieces.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it's a great service to the art community, and it's going to be something that people can get out of their houses and do and still maintain the proper, mm-hmm. personal distancing and all that that we need to pay attention to still these days.
Right. And these artists need support through this tough time. So that's the only thing I can figure out that's going to help them with that. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, Denny, it's a great project. Congratulations on that. And I hope that I'm sure that you'll have quite a parade going around town, the various towns, on Saturday.
I sure hope so.
For the show.
Yeah, that's my goal.
Okay. Denny, thank you so much for talking with us today. And again, the best of luck on this whole endeavor.
I appreciate you contacting me and wish me luck.
Search Facebook for Art on the Go Show to get more information on Denny Carman's project. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. We're grateful for our guests today, Wes Jessup, Dawn Volsky, and Denny Carman. Likewise to pianists Julia Gorenman and Melody Puller, and of course, to Johann Sebastian Bach for the music. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.